Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
On Monday at this time, we get our house call from Dr. Kevin Most, who is the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, doctor. How are things?
Bob, we're doing okay. How about you guys?
You know, hanging in there. And it seems like every week we get a new piece of information about this virus and a new symptom. I was looking at a couple of stories over the weekend and this morning. First, it was intense loss of smell and taste. Then it was GI issues. And now apparently new evidence suggesting patients infected with the virus can experience a skin rash as well. What's the story on this?
Yeah, well, we know, Bob, that rashes are very common in many viruses. If you think about chickenpox, if you think about measles, roseola, those are all viral infections that that cause skin eruptions. Now, certainly we're looking at probably 10 to 20% of those individuals who have coronavirus have some type of skin rash. The bad thing is it's not a single rash. Some are coming up as hives. Some are coming up with red bumps. Some are coming up scaling. So it'd be nice if we had a simple, consistent rash that would help us with the diagnosis. The other thing is we're seeing that the rash is coming on after you've been sick for a while. So we've almost already made the diagnosis, and then you get the rash. And that's not uncommon. As the rash and the virus spreads, you're going to start to see more skin eruptions. So I wish it was better news. It's kind of neat, but it's not anything that we're going to say, oh, you have the rash, therefore you have COVID. We don't even need to test you.
All of this is just so new. I mean, part of the problem here is that we haven't known about this virus and haven't had much time to study it. There's another report about the illnesses caused by the virus. Not only can it affect lungs, but apparently the brain as well.
Yeah, we're starting to see individuals who have strokes have some seizures as well. Now, the exact tie is difficult. And again, it's going to come down to which individuals are more immunocompromised. Are you having a bigger viral load? And when you have that bigger viral load, does it have the capability then to cross the blood-brain barrier and cause seizures or cause hypercoagulable, where your blood clots quicker and you end up having a stroke? So a lot of, like you said, as we start to get more and more patients and more individuals that have this, we're going to start looking for more history of how the individual is and what they might have had and comorbidities and which ones are the most important. And then we're also going to look at more symptoms to start to line up and say, oh, you know, diarrhea now may be a symptom that we should be considering as well.
Based on what you're seeing and hearing, how close are we to relaxing the restrictions here in Chicago?
Well, it was very disappointing to see what happened in Florida. So I certainly hope that the governor takes a look at that and sees that that was probably not the right thing to do. I think you're going to start to see a loosening, hopefully not until May, maybe mid-May, and then it'll be a well-coordinated releasing of what companies can open, what other services can we have now, what else can we safely do. But I hope the companies now are thinking about this through a mind of, if the governor says yes, what can we do to keep any of our patrons safe, whether it's be in a store, whether it be in a factory, because we will be getting back to the normal, but it's going to be a brand new normal. And I still think we're a little ways away. We've seen some encouraging numbers come out this morning. We've had very encouraging numbers here at the hospital at Central DuPage over the past couple of days. But a day or two does not make a trend, unfortunately.
How taxed are we there? You know all about Northwestern Medicine, but I know you talk to colleagues in other operations and other hospitals all over the place. Are we doing okay? Are we taxed to the max still?
We're doing okay. We're not taxed to the max. You know, we haven't hit these numbers of where we're going to run out of ventilators or we're going to run out of PPE. Now, that being said, there are some hospitals in the city that are being a little bit more taxed. You know, you look at Roseland Hospital on the south side, you look at Weiss on the north side. You know, these are hospitals that have areas where they're seeing a lot of comorbidities and a lot of patients who are really stressing those hospitals. But you have hospitals like Rush, U of C, Northwestern that are doing okay. They're holding their own and are getting some really good success stories of patients recovering and being sent home.
Saw a story, I think it was yesterday, about some sort of super potent plasma treatment for the virus. How far are we away from that?
Well, we're a little bit away, but it's interesting. You know, we've been using plasma to treat patients for going on 100 years now. So we have known, you know, before we had antibiotics and before we had, you know, other strong drugs, we used to use plasma from individuals who had an illness to help others. The concept is pretty simple. It's once somebody has had an illness and survives that illness, they have antibodies. So we draw your blood, we spin it down, we take the plasma portion, the clear portion, which is rich with antibodies. We then take that plasma portion and inject it into an individual who has the illness. And that at least allows for the antibodies from the other individual to help that the sick individual fight off the infection. So are we far away from that? You know, science is going to be very cool very, very shortly that we're going to find this antibody in these individuals, and now we're going to mass produce it instead of having to take serum from everyone. Serum from one individual can probably treat two patients, but if we can take that antibody out and then mass produce it, you're talking about, you know, that would be a game changer.
What about that antibody test where you just get your finger pricked and based on that blood draw from that, you can tell if we've had the disease, and then you can tell about immunity. That seems to be closer, and isn't that a key to reopening the country?
Very much so. There's a couple things about it. One is we don't have enough of the tests right now, and two, a lot of the tests that flooded the market coming from China were found to be very faulty. So we really need to make sure that we have a good FDA test. We're expecting one from Abbott here very shortly. Now, there's a couple interesting things. One is it will tell you if you had the illness. So these are the individuals that in January and February had what they thought was influenza. They went to their doctor's office. They were tested for influenza. They were tested for strep. Both came back negative. They may have been COVID. So if we do go and test those individuals, we may find that they have antibodies, which tells us they had the infection previously, even if they don't remember it. Difficult thing is we don't know whether those antibodies are going to be at a high enough level to give you immunity. It will certainly give you immunity for the short time, but will we have those antibodies at high levels in November, December of next year so that it gives us full protection? That's unclear at this point.
It's our Monday morning house call with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, why does this virus affect people so differently? You hear about folks who have had the virus. Some have no symptoms. Some have one symptom. Some have all of them. Do we have any idea why the disparity?
Well, we know the big disparity, and that's, you know, obviously the seniors, the elderly, and those with comorbidities. We know that their immune system is not as strong as other immune systems. And what happens there is the virus gets to a point where the body can't do anything, and it throws everything it possibly can at it and doesn't do well. Those individuals who are young and healthy are the ones that are saying, well, you know, I had a little cough or I had a little cold and, you know, I did pretty well. We are seeing that some people that are young and healthy are getting hit pretty hard, similar to what they would get hit with influenza. So we're not really sure exactly why, but it appears to be how strong is your immune system and how well you can fight it off versus anything else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I've heard so many different things about this as far as symptoms being different for young people, different for old people. I've heard obesity plays a factor here. I even heard one doctor talk about how there was a theory, and you probably know about this, that the immune system in young people is much stronger than the immune system in older people, and the virus kicks it into overdrive that may actually be detrimental. Have you looked into that at all?
Oh, no, no. That's exactly what happens here. So, you know, if you think about older people, when we give them a flu vaccine, what do? We give them the high-dose vaccine because we know their immune system is not good. And it's exactly what happens is the immune system is actually what does the damage here. The virus gets to a point and the immune system gets kicked into overdrive and fills the lungs up with fluid, and that's what's causing our biggest problems. So it's how do we temper the immune system? And that's why you're seeing some of the drugs that we're seeing that decrease inflammation. People say, well, you've told us all the time, Dr. Most, that that antibiotics don't work for viruses, and yet we know that Zithromax is one of the medications that they're trying. And that's because it'll decrease the immune system response and decrease the fluid buildup in the lungs. It doesn't do anything to kill the virus.
Are you tired of people like me reading too much about this and listening to too many doctors on TV and then hitting you with all of this?
No. You know, Bob, I think, you know, getting education out to people is important. You know, I think some of the stuff we're hearing needs to be tempered and needs to be explained. You know, if you look at the medications now, you know, President Trump had thought that hydroxychloroquine was going to be the game-changer drug, and it's panning out that that may not. So we really need to make sure that when we do say a drug is going to work, that we've done the right studies on it to prove that it's work versus anecdotal studies of someone got better after they took a couple doses.
Is remdesivir now the drug of hope?
It is the drug of hope. Remdesivir is a very interesting drug. Started in 2009, the company Gilead was trying to see if it would help fight hepatitis C, and it didn't do that well. And then they tried it against Ebola, and it didn't do that well. Now, that being said, this is a drug that could work on almost any virus because the way that it works is it tries to stop the virus from replicating. So it's a drug that can hit many different viruses potentially. Now, we do know that there's a huge study going on, Northwestern University of Chicago participating in this, so that it's not an anecdotal. The anecdotal one was 113 patients, and they kind of saw what they looked to be very promising. The study that's going on now has 6,000 people in it. So we're going to get better science and better data, and that's what we need instead of the anecdotal. I think this might work. Let's just try it.
We talked with you last week about the importance of vitamin D. The World Health Organization study said that vitamin D deficiency may affect the immune system. And we're going to get sunshine today. It's great to get out, get some of that natural vitamin D from the sun as opposed to from a pill. But I'm also hearing a lot about magnesium, reducing inflammation, regulating the immune system. How important is magnesium? Should we be taking that?
Well, yeah, magnesium and zinc are two that are getting a lot of press right now. And I'd be very careful just to make sure you don't jump on the bandwagon and say, well, I'm going to make sure I take a whole bunch of magnesium. You know, anything is good in a good balanced diet. So both magnesium and zinc can decrease inflammation, can also slow the replication. That's why, you know, zinc is being used in so many of these zinc lozenges. But don't take it and say, well, if 10 is good, then I'm going to take 50. You have to be very careful with some of the medications that you're taking. And that's true with vitamins as well. You know, don't take too many of them. One, it's a waste. Two, there are side effects from every medication that you potentially are taking.
And let's talk a little bit about masks. And there is still some confusion about who should be wearing a mask, when we should be wearing a mask. It's my understanding that if you're out and about and you can keep your social distance with no problem, don't worry about a mask. But anything short of that, you need to wear one today. Am I right?
Yeah. You know, if you're going to be outside and you control your environment and you control who's around you, certainly the need for a mask is probably not going to do much. Because, again, you have to remember the mask is protecting others from you, not so much protecting you from others. Although blocking the nose and blocking the mouth decreases the amount of time we touch our face. Now, if you're going to be into a store, if you're going to the grocery store, out of common courtesy, wearing a mask is important. It gives reassurance to the other people that you're around that even if you were an asymptomatic carrier, you're not going to spread it. So will it protect you? It'll protect you a little bit, but we have enough anxiety over this right now that anything we can do to decrease the anxiety of others, which may be wearing a simple mask when you go to the grocery store, is a polite thing to do, because sleep and decreasing anxiety also have just as much importance in our immune system as the vitamins do.
There are reports, I'm sure you've heard them, alcohol sales way up. That can't be good, can it?
No, it really isn't. Yeah, it is kind of, when people, unfortunately, when they're under stress, often will go to alcohol as a crutch or as a help. But I'd say be very careful. Now, we have to realize that bar sales are way down, so carryout liquor is way up. Are we using the same amount? Well, there's concerns here that people are using more alcohol as a stress-related thing to decrease their stress. Be very careful. Moderation is okay. A couple glasses of wine is actually good for your heart, but knocking off a bottle is probably not the best idea.
And it's red wine that you doctors always recommend, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the tannins in the red wine and the skin of the red grapes. Unfortunately, those individuals who like the white wines are not going to get the heart benefit that those who drink red wines do.
And I guess the only benefit from the Dairy Queen milkshake I like is it's going to make me feel good for about a half an hour, huh?
That, and you get a little vitamin D from that, so don't totally decrease it.
All right, I won't. I'm going there today. Always informative. Thanks, as always, to Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital. You have a good day, sir.
Take care, Bob. We'll talk to you next week.